Okay, if we could resume our seats, please.
Okay.
The next item on our agenda is item 4, Environmental Quality, California Environmental Quality Act scoping meeting for proposed water quality control plan amendment. Ta-da! There it is. To remove the prohibition on new pier construction and fish spawning habitat at Lake Tahoe. Before we go to the staff presentation on this, I'd like to ask our council if she could share with us some thoughts about what we're doing here in terms of the CEQA process and what's involved in this item.
Thank you, Chair. Hi, this is Elizabeth, your counsel. I was asked to speak a few words on this item since CEQA scoping meetings are often not held before the board. They're usually staff-led workshops, and we wanted to give an opportunity for the board to hear the comments from the public. CEQA scoping meetings are an opportunity for the public to engage with us and to provide input on the scope of our CEQA analysis. This is an informational item. It is not a hearing. We are not considering the Basin Plan Amendment at this time. With that being said, the board is welcome to provide questions and comments, but the main point of this meeting is to solicit input from the public. And I think Bob is going to cover that a little bit more in the presentation about the type of feedback that he's seeking from the public. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Lawson.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, thank you so much for the opportunity to speak. I have the enviable position of thinking about a basin plan amendment, so the swamp that you just referenced is one that I am intimately familiar with at this point and will drag you through a little bit this evening. As you already defined CEQA, which is nice, I don't have to say those words again, so we are here to do a CEQA scoping meeting for a proposed basin plan amendment, and that basin plan amendment relates to the removal of a prohibition that we have in our basin plan related to pier construction at Lake Tahoe. Quick overview of my presentation. I'm going to talk about the scoping meeting and purpose, probably reiterate some of the comments that Ms. Farrick just made, provide some background as to where we are and where we've been with respect to piers in Lake Tahoe, and then talk about what the proposed basin plan amendment might look like, and then brief you on what the CEQA process is and talk about some of the timelines for moving forward. So, as Elizabeth mentioned, our purpose here today really is to inform the public and you, the board, and other interested folks as to what we're thinking about, to share our ideas and our concepts with respect to how we propose to amend the basin plan in the future. This gives the opportunity for folks in the public as well as our agency partners to share with us their comments and specifically comment on the scope of our environmental analysis that we need to conduct to amend the basin plan and to answer any questions, frankly, just to hear what folks have to say and answer any questions that folks might have about what we're thinking about doing. So as far as some background, the contemporary land use regulations in Tahoe were adopted by the Tahoe Regional Planning Agency in roughly 1987. And when we adopted our basin plan in 1995, our basin plan update at that time, we mimicked a lot of the land use restrictions that TRPA had adopted to ensure that water quality was protected. And so if you look back at our basin plan at that time, it included restrictions on coverage and development rights and a bunch of details with respect to how development is conducted in Lake Tahoe. Since that time, there have been a couple policies that have been adopted that have advanced our thinking and the way that we manage our resources in the basin. The first of those you are most familiar with is the Lake Tahoe Total Maximum Daily Load, which guides our efforts to restore Lake Tahoe's clarity. And then the TRPA updated its regional plan in 2012, and in many ways referencing the TMDL, as well as providing some new thinking again on land use. And so that kind of established new policy direction at that time. You may recall that in 2013, we brought some basin plan amendments to you to basically align our basin plan with those new policies. And at that time, we removed a lot of the land use restrictions that were included in the basin plan, again, to sort of line up with where the new and updated policy landed. Unfortunately, there was a little bit of a hanging chad with respect to updated policy, and that is Lake Tahoe's shoreline policy. And that's shoreline development as related to the number of piers, the number of buoys, where those are located, what they look like, what type of mitigation measures they need, all those sorts of things. TRPA has struggled with a stakeholder disagreement on those shoreline restrictions and regulations for some time. And so because of that, those ordinances were a bit stale, and they were not updated in 2012 with everything else in the regional plan. So when we did our 2013 Basin Plan amendments, we left a prohibition that was related to piers in our Basin Plan to maintain consistency with TRPA. That prohibition is here before you. It is really related to the discharge attributable to new pier construction of waste to significant spawning habitats or to areas immediately offshore of stream inlets at Lake Tahoe. And basically what this is it's a de facto prohibition. There are absolutely, you cannot build a pier in these locations because there are no exemption criteria or other mechanisms in our basin plan that provide for that action to take place. The great news is that we've made progress. TRPA initiated a mediated stakeholder progress to get all of the players in the room and have a conversation about how to move forward. And I've been a part of that process for the last 2 years. It's been a pleasure. And there have been roughly 39 meetings, I think I saw, over the last 2 years, many of them 6 to 8 hours long, really hashing out the issues in terms of what Lake Tahoe's shoreline regulation should look like. And we're bringing that process home now. There is an environmental document on the street now, and TRPA is poised to update its restrictions. There are a lot of details in that plan, again, related to the number of piers, the number of buoys, where they're sited, how historical structures are dealt with, a variety of things. But among what they're proposing to do is to remove the prohibition that they have in their code that prohibits pier development and significant fish spawning habitat. So, to align and make sure that our agency is consistent with the regional planning agency, we would propose a basin plan amendment to maintain that consistency and remove that prohibition. And here's what it would look like. I haven't done all the work yet, honestly, but when I look at the basin plan, it seems like mostly it's just a strikeout exercise. And so I would basically propose that the staff would bring forward to this board a basin plan amendment that would strike out the reference prohibition. I want to highlight that there are other prohibitions related to discharges at Lake Tahoe that still apply to pier development. There's a prohibition related to the discharge to stream environment zones and to surface waters, both of which apply when you're developing a pier. So the difference being is there are exception criteria in our basin plan for those prohibitions. So provided that those exception criteria are met, a project proponent could move forward. So again, this isn't a free-for-all. We're just taking away the prohibition and everybody gets to do what they want. This is just a kind of a surgical removal of what I see as a remnant of old land use policy. Again, the point here is that there's stringent oversight that remains from on both TRPA side and the Water Board side. This slide just shows a little bit about what that regulatory oversight looks like. TRPA's proposed updated code has a go-slow approach. They're proposing that there will be allowed 12 new piers every 2 years throughout the basin. Total build-out over the next 20 years will be 120 new private piers. And again, that's throughout the entire basin in both California and Nevada. There's a bunch of detailed design standards, setbacks, mitigation measures, a bunch of different things that need to be done before a project proponent can propose a pier in Lake Tahoe under TRPA's rules. On top of that, this agency has a pretty significant permitting authority as well. The Army Corps of Engineers has to issue a permit under Clean Water Act Section 404 for any activity in the lake that involves dredge or fill material. Again, that includes piers. And this agency, under Clean Water Act Section 401, needs to certify that that activity meets our needs as well. So we have a very significant regulatory authority to exercise any concern that we might have about any potential project. And as I referenced, there are existing basin plan prohibitions that would still persist, and so exceptions to those prohibitions would still need to be made, still need to go through those criteria and make sure that everything is on the up and up. The last point here is that of those different regulatory requirements and mitigation measures, both TRPA and the Water Board require that any lake bed that is disturbed be restored in a 1.5-to-1 ratio. So anytime there's a significant spawning habitat disturbed in Lake Tahoe, if there are gravels that are disturbed, our regulations as well as TRPA's mandate that that habitat to be replaced in a ratio of 1.5 to 1. So we're actually going to be increasing the number of spawning gravels any time that we build it here in Utah. Turning now to the CEQA process, again, I appreciate Chair Humphrey's comments in terms of how we go through this exercise. The Water Board's planning program to amend its basin plan is considered exempt under CEQA. That said, we are mandated to perform what's known as a substitute environmental document, a document analysis. And it's essentially a checklist that's very similar to other CEQA processes where we look at impacts to specific resource areas, such as water quality, biological resources, et cetera, and see how our proposed action could potentially impact the environment so we all understand what we're doing and what potential impacts are moving forward. So again, tonight what we're doing is not asking the board for a decision. We're not asking to move forward at this time. I'm not bringing any proposal to you. We're just essentially sharing with you our ideas as to what we want to do and seeking comments on the scope of that environmental analysis from our partners. Looking at the timeline moving forward, we are right now in that first bullet, what we refer to as early stakeholder engagement. We want to, again, let folks know what we're doing and get folks' thoughts on it as early as we can. If all goes well, I will complete a staff report and the environmental checklist and the proposed language and circulate that for review in November, and then solicit comments on that document in December of 2018. Looking at our calendar, it looks like our next opportunity to bring this to the board will be in January of 2019. And during that time, TRPA expects to update its code. This slide was actually prepared before I had a full understanding of their schedule, and TRPA is actually looking at adopting its code in October of this year. So TRPA is going to move forward with its process towards the tail end of this year, and we'd like to follow close behind. As I indicated, we would like to bring this back to the board in January of 2019 for a decision from this board. And that would set up in a process that would take it to the State Water Board for consideration and approval, likely in March of 2019, and then on to the Office of Administrative Law for final approvals. Again, these are estimates here as far as April 2019. What this does is really sets up, again, the consistency with TRPA regulations to make sure that lakefront property owners in Lake Tahoe have a consistent set of regulations to move forward from, particularly for the building season. A note on document availability, there's nothing up yet because I haven't prepared a draft yet, but when there is an environmental document and staff report, we will be posting those things online on our website as noted there. And of course, as always, the public and other interested parties can reach out to us at our South Lake Tahoe office and chat with us there, and we can get you a hard copy as necessary. I will mention that we did circulate this meeting notice widely. TRPA provided an extensive contact list. I believe there was 350 email names that it sent out to. And so we did get a comment response from a gentleman, Steve Dolan, in Incline Village, who expressed some concern. And again, I think on the face of it, when you read that we are going to be removing a prohibition on pure development and fish farming habitat, I was like, no, don't do that. I think he had some very visceral concerns about opening up the floodgates in terms of pure development in Lake Tahoe. I had an opportunity to chat with Mr. Dolan a couple weeks ago. We had a very nice discussion, and I was able to set his mind at ease with respect to the concerns that he had. So that's the only comment that we've received to date, but I'll be certainly noting any folks who have any comments this evening, and again, reaching out and providing the public further opportunity during the process as we wade our way through the swamp of amending the basin. So with that, I'm happy to take any questions that the board might have.
Thank you for making me regret having used that term.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You're never too old to learn lessons. Often too old to remember what they were. I think I'll ask if there are any questions from members of the board at this point. Ms. Cox?
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Larson, thank you for the excellent presentation. I was wondering if you could help me understand. I was looking at your slide number 8, that if there is a disturbance in the lake bed, that it would be restored in a ratio of 1.5 to 1. How is that restoration? Is it bringing in a particular gravel bed that helps with the spawning, or what exactly is the restoration?
At That's a fantastic question. Thank you, Ms. Cox, for raising that issue. Mitigation is tricky. And really, it depends on the type of lakebed that is disturbed. And so, again, both our regulations and TRPA's regulations require the project proponent to characterize the type of lakebed that they'll be disturbing, and then identifying potential restoration sites. So with spawning gravels in particular, we may be talking about a particular gravel size, and there may be an opportunity on the project site to essentially move or add those gravels to another location to provide that spawning opportunity. In other instances, it may be more appropriate for the project proponent to seek mitigation sites off in a different location. The short answer is it's a site-by-site consideration in terms of the type of mitigation and the location of that mitigation. The important thing, or I think the valuable thing, is that we want to make sure that that mitigation is essentially in excess, that we're not just sort of replacing it in kind, but we're actually providing that 1.5-to-1 ratio to make sure that any disturbance is truly mitigated. And there's some discussion as well in terms of some potential monitoring of those mitigation sites to make sure that it is successful.
Thank you. And just a curious question, how many fish species are there in Lake Tahoe?
That is a great question that I do not have the answer to. I will say that Lake Tahoe's fishery is dominated by introduced species. So Lake Tahoe used to have a thriving population of Lahontan and cutthroat trout. And Lahontan cutthroat trout were the dominant predator and apex species in Lake Tahoe. They were essentially fished out in the 30s. They were out there with nets and going crazy because there were some really big fish to catch, and they fished them out. And in response to that, the folks at Fish and Wildlife and some other parties thought it'd be great if we introduced a different kind of trout, the Mackinac or lake trout, to provide for that sport fishery. In addition, the Kokanee salmon were added, and I think this was sometime in the 60s, but I know there are folks in the room that can probably answer this better than I. But in essence, what we did was add some different sport fish species to provide a sport fishery at Lake Tahoe. Not only that, but we added what we thought would be good food for those sport fisheries in the form of very small shrimp as well as crayfish. And essentially upset the delicate balance of Lake Tahoe in ways that we still are trying to understand. There are some native fish species still in Lake Tahoe. There is a speckled dace, a nice, cute little fish, a red-side shiner, I believe, and a couple others. Unfortunately, I'm sad to report that most of the native fish species in Lake Tahoe continue to decline. And they're on the decline not because of a lack of spawning habitat. They are on decline because the Mackinac and the Kokanee salmon are voracious, and they tend to eat the young of the native species. So we don't, again, fully understand all of those dynamics, but we do know that the native fish species are on the decline. We have pretty good reason to believe that it has nothing to do with piers, but we do have a thriving sport fishery here at Lake Tahoe.
Thank you. No further questions.
Thank you. Mr. Dias.
Yes, thank you. Bob, is TRPA also conducting some type of similar CEQA process for lifting the prohibition on pier development?
No, they aren't conducting anything similar. They're actually doing something more extraordinarily robust. Elizabeth Bender with TRPA is here today, so if there are specific TRPA questions, I will certainly bring her up to support. But the TRPA environmental analysis is extraordinarily complex and detailed due to the scope and scale of what they're proposing. So related to the fish habitat that the specific prohibition, the short answer is yes, there is a section of their document that describes that. It actually looks back at some science that was performed in the late 80s, I guess it was mid-90s, and they rely on that science to really show how piers negatively impact the habitat and how they can be mitigated. When we looked at that science, we found that science, frankly, to be a little bit older than we preferred, and so we're just looking at the scale of the potential impact as well as our regulatory oversight. We have a degree of comfort that we can move forward not relying on any scientific basis, but simply on the administrative oversight that we maintain for this activity. So the short answer is yes, TRPA is doing some environmental analysis. It's extraordinarily detailed, and I'd be happy to point board members or any members of the public to where they can find that analysis online and take a closer look.
Thank you. No more questions.
Mr. Jardy?
No questions.
Mr. Sandale?
Do I correctly understand that we've actually removed a little bit of work from our responsibilities as a result of this?
Well, we've removed a little bit of the work from the Basin Planning Unit by having a Basin Plan amendment done outside of the unit. It hasn't removed work from me. As far as our oversight, the short answer is no. There's actually no... because this prohibition exists right now, there are no peer proposals that can advance in these areas. And so this actually, I won't say this creates work, but this basically just allows a broader consideration of different peer projects in Lake Tahoe. So I don't think it affects our permitting workload in a substantive way, positively or negatively, I'm afraid.
Okay, thank you.
Dr. Horn, any questions?
No, I have no questions. Thank you.
I have no questions also. Thank you very much. I do not have any cards, but is there anyone in the audience from the public who wishes to speak to this particular agenda item? If not, if you have comments or concerns, please do not hesitate to send them in as indicated in the presentation. I'll ask if there are any comments from members of the board. Ms. Cox?
No comment.
Mr. Diaz?
No comment, thank you.
Mr. Jardine?
No comments.
Mr. Sandell?
No comments.
Dr. Horn?
Well, this is great to have this item come up after the triennial review because it's a specific example of the amount of work involved in amending the basin plan. And in this case, the whole policy was developed by another agency. And really, the work here is to do a bunch of strikeouts. But nonetheless, it's creating a significant amount of work, just amending the basin plan. So that makes me very sober about the number of projects that we have on our triennial list. That's my comment.
Thank you. I have no comments. I've used up my comments for the duration. Thank you very much, and we look forward to seeing the results of your work soon. Item 5 on the agenda is an update regarding Lake Tahoe programs.
Good evening, Mr. Chair, members of the board. appreciate the opportunity to speak with you. Robert Larson, as an environmental scientist working on Lake Tahoe programs primarily, with the occasional basin plan amendment thrown in when I'm bored. Annually, we like to meet with you to talk about what's going on in Tahoe. As Mr. Pumphrey noted, there's a lot of things we do here. We are fortunate to have to enjoy, in many cases, a great deal of resources in terms of policy and program development. So I appreciate the comment that there are opportunities to learn and build from what we've done in Tahoe and take those things in other areas. And while I won't be able to share anything specific about Lahontan, I am excited to share with you some things that are happening outside of our region with respect to lessons learned here at Tahoe. So, I have a Tahoe programs update for you today. It is broken up into three vignettes. I will speak first about the Lake Tahoe TMDL, and that is the total maximum daily load program. I'll talk a little bit about the municipal stormwater permit, and then address Lake Tahoe's nearshore program. Within each of these three brief presentations, I'll provide a quick overview slide to make sure that we're all on the same page, summarize its status, and before diving into some more detail about some of the more interesting items. I don't have that many slides, and so I think it's probably best just to go ahead and fly through them and then take questions at the end. But certainly at the pleasure of the board, if you're welcome to stop me at any time if you have questions or about some clarifications. So, the Lake Tahoe TMDL. You guys have heard me talk about the TMDL how many times now? I don't know. A few times, more than twice. The total maximum daily load is the Water Board and Nevada Division of Environmental Protection's program to address historic clarity loss at Lake Tahoe and to restore Lake Tahoe's clarity. That policy and the associated basin plan amendment was approved by the board in 2010. Our friend at US EPA, Jack Landy of EPA, is joining us here this evening, approved that, that process in 2011. And recall that the implementation plan focuses on what's going on in the urbanized area. We found that urban stormwater runoff is the primary source of the fine sediment particles influencing clarity, and so we focus our implementation on addressing that. We have a 20-year target to halt Lake Tahoe's clarity decline. We're rapidly moving towards it. But the big plan for restoring Lake Tahoe's clarity, achieving the 100 feet of clarity that we used to measure back in the late 60s and early 70s, we expect that to take some more time. We have a 65-year plan for full restoration, and I don't expect to be here then. If all goes well. As far as status, things are on track, right? The Tahoe TMDL is at this point, pretty vetted policy, and things are working well with our implementation partners. We do an annual adaptive management cycle that includes a findings and recommendations process. I've highlighted a couple things here that we found in 2017 that our reporting could be a little bit better integrated, specifically related to the non-urban sources. Remember that forested uplands, atmospheric deposition, and stream channel erosion are also important sources of pollutants reaching Lake Tahoe, and we found that we could do a better job of integrating our reporting with those non-urban sources. And that our RoadGram policy needs to be looked at. The RoadGram is the Road Rapid Assessment Methodology. This is related to the Lake Clarity Crediting Program, and it is our inspection process by which our partners at local and state government review their roadways and make sure that that they're actually improving things in a manner consistent with their modeled estimates. So when we looked at how RoadGram is working, now that it has been in practice for a couple years, we found that there are some things that we could adjust. Our friends at UC Davis monitor Lake Tahoe's clarity. They go out there a couple times a month and drop the Secchi disk and measure clarity. And then in the spring, they report the average annual value. And that average annual value was reported in 2017 and gave us something to talk about. I'm going to skip over the RoadGram item and address that under the municipal and PDS discussion, but I do want to touch briefly on the reporting and the clarity discussion. So the Tahoe Regional Planning Agency's LT Info platform is quickly becoming the system of record for a lot of programs here at Lake Tahoe. And I'm excited to say that we had an opportunity in this spring to actually transfer over our TMDL online interface. We had a website that was managed by both the states of California and Nevada that was outside of the LT Info platform that provided our TMDL information. And we had an opportunity in the spring to integrate that into the LT Info software platform. It's been rebranded as the Lake Clarity Tracker, and doing so allowed us an opportunity to automate the reporting information for our non-urban sources. We use a set of performance metrics that are tracked by the Tahoe Regional Planning Agency's Environmental Improvement Program, items such as miles of road decommissioned or area of land restored or revegetated, miles of stream, or linear feet of stream bank that have been restored. These type of things are tracked by TRPA, and we have a kind of a clunky process of getting that information into our system. This integration effort allowed us an opportunity, again, to automate that and make it smooth, and so actually it's in real time, and all that information flows directly. It also gave us a chance to really provide a more transparent and accessible way for folks to access our TMDL documentation. So a lot of it is the same. It's just been polished up a little bit and integrated with some of the other things going on. 2017 clarity. You may have seen some press on this. As I indicated, that value is reported in the spring, and this spring, UC Davis reported that the 2017 average annual clarity was at 59.7 feet. That is a loss of what we saw the previous year, and it is the worst reported clarity on record. So it has raised some concern, particularly for those of us that dedicate our career to restoring the Tahoe's clarity. It has definitely raised some questions in terms of what is going on and why. So why is Lake Tahoe's clarity? Why did Lake Tahoe's clarity in 2017? I wish I knew. There are a variety of things that we think may be going on. We know that the winter of 1718 was characterized, or sorry, 1617 was characterized by a series of abnormally wet and warm storms. These atmospheric rivers that we saw move through. So how that impacted the way that particles are delivered to the lake and when is still something that we're looking at. We also know that that summer was followed by, or that winter was followed by, what was at the time the warmest summer on record. That is now being eclipsed by the current summer, but nonetheless, we know we had a very, very warm summer that followed that that wet winter. So what this suggests to us is that the changing climate is probably altering what's going on in Lake Tahoe, and we need to understand why. States of California and Nevada are both very interested in this question. It is likely that there will be some resources brought to bear to do some further research on this. There is a Bi-State Tahoe Science Advisory Council that was established by the states of California and Nevada, and both the Secretary of Natural Resources as well as the Director of Natural Resources in Nevada posed a series of questions to that science council following the release of this this report, and basically asking why, and provide some information to that. So those folks are dutifully working on that, and we're working with TRPA as well as other partners, Nevada, of course, and trying to look at sort of how we can understand these things. It's possible that 2017 was just a blip and on the radar. We know that clarity varies from year to year. It is primarily driven by hydrology and meteorology. That's why we don't necessarily, that's why we don't have a standard for annual clarity every year. So we're not saying that the sky is falling, but we know that we need to do some research and understand exactly what's going on. So again, I think that's probably the exciting thing going on with the TMDL right now. Is really understanding why we saw this this dip in clarity and seeing what, if anything, we can do to respond and whether or not our policy is still on track. Moving to Chapter 2, the Municipal Stormwater Permit, we can take a very long view of what's going on with the Municipal Stormwater Permit. Again, this board is aware that the Municipal Stormwater Permit here at Lake Tahoe is our primary implementing regulation for the Lake Tahoe TMDL. It regulates the stormwater runoff discharges from the cities of Lake Tahoe, El Dorado, and Placer counties here, so it's the California side of the Tahoe Basin. It was first established in 1992, and this board adopted an updated permit in 2017. We've talked a lot about the Lake Clarity Crediting Program and how we use that those tools to track progress and make sure that they're achieving the standards and goals that we set. And so again, that is still in the works. As far as status, again, things are looking pretty good. The permit that was adopted last year set an interim target of a 15% fine sediment particle reduction. And so we are rapidly approaching that interim target. So permittees are dutifully working to register their activities within the Lake Clarity Crediting Program and track their progress. And by all accounts, at this point, everybody is on track to meet that interim target. I will say that things are getting harder as time goes by. It was a pretty straightforward exercise to meet the first permit load reduction requirements that were set. We're now moving into the second five-year target, or the first 10 years of TMDL implementation. And folks are having to get a little bit more creative, and this is where we're seeing a focus on roads, frankly. It's not just looking at the infrastructure, but what can we do with respect to roads? Looking, and with respect to roads, because more folks are looking at roads, again, we've been looking at how we track them, and so as I noted in the TMDL discussion, we identified some potential concerns, and so there's a project underway to address some of those concerns. The road grant, the crediting program, the pollutant load reduction model, all the elements of our stormwater management program are housed on Lake Tahoe Info, and they have been safely hidden behind password firewalls for a very long time because it's really complex. But we, you know, as we have grown more comfortable with their use and jurisdictions begin to get more information out there that is of value to different stakeholders, we've actually made those tools now publicly available. Anybody can get online and start looking under the hood and looking at the details of what's going on with the Lake Clarity Crediting Program. And the last point here is trash requirements. The State Water Board, 2 years ago now, adopted requirements, statewide requirements, that all municipalities address trash discharges, and so I'll talk a little bit about how our permittees are doing that. Probably seeing a trend here. I'm going to show another screenshot like this, just some foreshadowing. The stormwater tools, as I indicated, they are housed on the Lake Tahoe Info stormwater or Lake Tahoe Info software platform. And again, they're publicly available at this point. The first thing that pops up is this nice chart that actually shows progress. Those red bars that you can see there are the targets and an individual jurisdiction's progress at meeting those targets. So we can actually start to, you know, for interested folks, you can start to, again, look at the details as to how things are working with the Lake Clarity Crediting Program from Tahoe Basin. And this isn't just in California. This is for our Nevada partners, too. so you can actually compare. If you want to see how California is doing in relation to Nevada, you can take a look. Again, looking at RoadRAM, this is the inspection practice, practices that are used to evaluate roadways. Recall that the load reduction model awards a load reduction for improving the condition of your road by changing the amount of sand and material on the road that can be mobilized when it rains. And the inspection process is our way to basically look at the roads and make sure that they are as clean as we expected. As jurisdictions have been using these more, there have been questions that have been raised both on the regulatory end as well as the implementation end. And so we're taking a close look at the timing, frequency, and location of the inspections, where we do it, when we do it, how we do it, to make sure that it adequately reflects the conditions of the roads and that that it actually is something doable for our partners as well. And there's some data management elements as well. So that project is generously funded by Nevada Division of Environmental Protection. And we have a coordinated project to address that. Vernon Ferry with Eldorado County is sitting on a stakeholder group to work on that. We have representatives from Caltrans as well who are there. So making some progress. Stay tuned on whether or not we need to make any changes, but that's where we are with that. Trash. Again, State Water Board has these requirements that say that all jurisdictions need to implement trash controls, essentially to demonstrate full capture, to eliminate trash discharges within the jurisdictions. And so our trash requirements are not included in the permit. State Board is still working out the implementation details when they adopted our permit in 2017. So our trash requirements are included in a Section 13383 order that was issued to the permittees. And permittees are the upcoming deadline for the permittees in that order is to submit a plan that describes how they're going to be meeting those requirements. That will be coming in December of this year, so just around the corner we'll have a clear idea. But again, we kind of have a general sense that our jurisdiction partners have done a really good job of identifying their priority areas. They have a lot of infrastructure on the ground to address stormwater already, and so really looking at how those facilities can demonstrate the full capture requirement that has been set, as well as monitor and show that they're doing what they need to do. So things are moving forward on trash. Part three, Lake Tahoe's near shore. The final part for sure, and getting on the evening, so I'll move quickly. I had an opportunity to chat with the board in November of last year. We had a long discussion about Lake Tahoe's near shore, so I won't bore you with all those details again. There is a definition here of Lake Tahoe's near shore, but really what we're talking about is, just as the name sounds right, this is the area that is near to the shore. This is the part of the lake that most people interact with. This, if you go to the lake, that's what you see. If you're going to go swimming in the lake, you paddle sports, all these things, but this is the area of the lake that most people interact with. And there's been some perception of change and some concern about what's going on there. As before, a quick status slide as to what's going on. Research and monitoring is the name of the game right now with respect to nearshore. We talked a lot about the complexity of the nearshore and the difficulty in understanding it given our lack of historic data. And so really what we're focused on right now is investing our research and monitoring dollars to get a better understanding of what's going on there. Again, as I foreshadowed, the reporting has been integrated into the online platform of the Tahoe Info, so we are able, again, to kind of start to bring a one-stop shop for information in Tahoe and integrate our nearshore discussion there. And in your packet was a draft nearshore water quality protection plan update. The nearshore water quality protection plan was initially prepared at the request of the legislature in 2014 to describe how our agency was going to be responding to Lake Tahoe's nearshore. And given the time that has passed, we felt it was appropriate to provide an update and describe the actions that have been taking place. So a few quick comments on those items. As I said, nearshore monitoring is our focus right now. We do have a resource allocation plan. We felt it was appropriate for us I think as Jennifer highlighted, and I think as we all know, there are more things we can study and more things we can do than we have dollars to invest. And so one of the first things that we did was establish a process by which we could prioritize our research and monitoring needs so we could put the monies where it mattered most. And so that process is in place and has actually been serving us quite well. We do have ongoing paraffin monitoring that has been funded by the Water Board for close to 30 years. Paraffin is the attached algae, that is the stuff that that is attached to the rocks. There was a trend analysis in 2016 that we talked about, summarizing 30 years of data, and currently I'm awaiting a product from UC Davis that actually reviews their monitoring approach and provides some recommendations so we can again decide whether or not we should keep monitoring in this way, or whether we should be changing things, and whether or not the monitoring is providing us the most useful information we can. Third point here, the Nearshore Network. There is a series of real-time sensors that have been established by UC Davis and Lake Tahoe to gather continuous data related to turbidity, temperature, wave height, chlorophyll, conductivity, and lake level. So we have some sensors in the lake that provide us this real-time information. We actually funded two of those stations. We see that this is a valuable investment for us to understand how the lake's Nearshore is functioning. And provides us, again, that real-time data. A couple projects underway currently. I should say projects. They're not project, but there are two projects in 2018. One is a macrophyte study. Those are aquatic plants. We know that aquatic plants in Lake Tahoe are very important. You've probably heard a lot about Lake Tahoe's milfoil problem. Invasive aquatic plants are really the big issue. And we've had some success in treating invasive plants. Again, this board has been involved in a couple different projects that have supported invasive controls. And what we've found is that we don't have a good lake-wide survey of where the plants are. And so we felt it was a valuable use of resources to support the development of such a study, not only just to do that once, but to establish the methods for how we're going to be doing that in the future. That project is underway right now using some pretty exciting remote sensing technologies. They're actually flying the entire perimeter of Lake Tahoe's near shore using LIDAR, so we'll have a very high-resolution spectral image of the near shore, and then relating that to some field work so we can start to, again, create some efficiencies in how we're gathering this information in the future. So that's the first project. The Human Health Project is one to evaluate bacteria and cyanobacteria. We did a survey in 2009 of some of the high-use areas, particularly beaches and some of the lake access areas, just to evaluate whether or not we had a bacteria problem there. We haven't done anything since 2009, and we felt it was appropriate to revisit those sites and just confirm that we still don't have bacteria. There's no bacteria concerns there. Coupled with that, we know that harmful algal blooms are a concern. We have seen harmful algal balloons show up in the Tahoe Keys, so we know that Tahoe is not immune to this. And so since we're out there collecting these samples, we found it appropriate to do a cyanobacteria survey as well. That's essentially just doing some microscopy to be able to evaluate whether or not the cyanobacteria are there. And so, again, it's more just a cheap kind of scan to see what's going on in the water in there. And again, bacteria helps us understand and confirm that all our human health beneficial uses are being met. Looking forward with respect to monitoring, you may remember that we have resources allocated to ongoing resources allocated to monitoring the cosmic shore, and using that allocation prioritization process, we've identified a couple studies we'd like to move forward with. The first is a study that will be funded or conducted by UC Davis to assess the impact of warming water on nutrient cycling and algal growth. Again, we know that every year for the last 5 years has been the warmest on record at Lake Tahoe. I mentioned those nearshore sensors. There's a nearshore sensor at Camp Richardson that measured 23 degrees Celsius this summer. So we are approaching very comfortable swimming temperatures in Lake Tahoe in the summer. And so this has raised some concern and, I think some very honest questions about how does that warming water impact what's going on with our nutrient cycling and the algal growth. So UC Davis proposed a study that we're hoping to fund there. A UNR study is twofold. The first is to look at groundwater nutrient sources. We funded a study with the USGS a couple of years back looking at algal growth on Lake Tahoe's west shore. That study found that groundwater delivery of nutrients seemed to be driving driving algal blooms in that location. Not necessarily large loads, but very high concentrations. And the natural question that followed that study was, well, where are those nutrients coming from? And so they're going to be employing some isotopic analysis to evaluate groundwater nutrient sources. And on a different vein, looking at how introduced crayfish influence algal growth at Lake Tahoe. I had an opportunity to talk a minute there about how the biology of Lake Tahoe has changed. There are a lot of crayfish in Lake Tahoe that weren't there before. And not only are they here, but they're also in Crater Lake in Oregon. Crater Lake in Oregon is a very interesting place in that it is an interesting analog for us. There's no development, obviously, in Crater Lake. They have a very strong crayfish population there, and they have experienced this year and in the last 2 years, really, some pretty significant bubble blooms of attached algae. And there's some thought that it might be due to the crayfish grazing on the invertebrates that are normally grazing on the algae. Again, these are some interesting questions to ask, and so we're going to be looking at doing an exclusion study to see how algae grows in areas where crayfish have access and how algae grows in areas where crayfish are being excluded, to take a closer look at that. We're really trying to figure out what's driving algal growth at Lake Tahoe. And again, there's a lot of different factors here, but these are a couple projects that start to move us in that direction. Most excitingly for me is that I don't have to juggle the nearshore anymore. We're in the process of hiring staff to support nearshore program activities. It has been a challenge for me to manage other programs that I've been sharing with you today, as well as other priorities that come up. And this is a great opportunity, I think, to devote some dedicated staff resources to what's going on in the nearshore. So we're pretty excited to move forward with that. Reporting, and you've seen these before, you can go online. And that same platform has a nice summary of what's going on in Lake Tahoe's nearshore. One of the first tasks of our new staff will be to actually go through and kind of clean some of this up, but nonetheless, it does provide a nice repository for relevant research reports and data so folks can look at what's happening on in the nearshore. The plan update that I referenced, again, what we hope to do in that plan is describe our progress since the plan was initially developed in 2014 and summarize our recent investments. Where have we put our money and what have we gotten for those monies? So that plan is, again, as part of your agenda packet, and it also describes what kind of needs we have and what we see in the future, where we see the program going and where we would like the answers that we would like to get out of the questions that we're asking. And so that plan, again, is going to be distributed for public review and comment. I welcome any thoughts that the board might have on that. And with that, my last slide, I will summarize, again, the three topic areas I spoke of. The Tahoe TMDL is looking pretty good, but we need to figure out what's happening with clarity. It may not be as simple as we thought. Municipal permits, folks are doing well, and the two improvements continue apace based on our adaptive management approach. And those trash plants that I mentioned should be coming in the coming months. Nearshore, we're going to keep looking at things. We're going to do the research and monitoring to better understand the drivers of the things that we care about. We've got that plan that I just spoke about, and the new staff that are going to help us kind of carry forward these things. It's great to see you now. We've got a closer look at the house. I'm glad she has no ability to zoom in on me.
She does.
Thank you for indulging me this evening. I appreciate your time and happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you for an incredible report. I think what I'd like to do, I have no yellow cards, so I'm going to ask if there is anyone in the audience, in the public, who wishes to comment or speak to this agenda item. And if there is not, then what I'd like to do is to open this to both questions and comments.
Oh, Brandon.
Sorry, I was just communicating. It was unclear whether he was free to leave or wanted to make a comment. sorry to pull you off.
Since I'm out at 9 p.m. instead of in bed, I better say something. Good evening, members of the board. My name is Brendan Ferry from El Dorado County. I like to talk to you every time Bob talks about our program. And really, I just want to thank Bob and Doug and
Ben.
Sorry, I haven't met Ben yet, but
I've heard
Ben's here. Just about the much more collaborative approach we're taking these days than we used to have. The olden days, 10 years ago, much more fighting over the numbers. In today's world, we're much more collaborative. We focus our time and energy on how to implement the program together, and I can say that we at El Dorado County and the other local jurisdictions have made tremendous strides at reducing our loads by changing our road abrasives, plowing and sweeping better, building better projects that are connected to the lake and other surface waters, And regardless what the numbers say, we do know that we're building our best work better than ever now. And I think we can say that with a straight face, which feels good. And so really, I'm just here to thank Bob, and we're going to keep moving forward. So thanks.
Thank you. Is there anyone else? Questions and or comments, Ms. Fox?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to thank Mr. Larson for such a thorough presentation. I find the complexities that you have to deal with there in Lake Tahoe absolutely fascinating, and climate change only adds to that complexity. So thank you for your work and for an excellent presentation.
Mr. Dias?
Yes, thank you. No comments, but one question. Bob, did you say that a LIDAR survey for mapping the nearshore was going on?
Yes. So there are a couple different LIDAR flights that are happening in the basin right now, but there is one specifically related to Lake Tahoe's nearshore that is part of this macrophyte survey. So I believe they may be done flying. I would need to check that, but it has happened in the last month, or actually in the last week or two, in terms of getting that done. So it's around the entire nearshore, so we'll have some high-resolution imagery, and then they're doing a series of transects in the water, and then to be able to compare that imagery to what they find on the ground to make those relationships.
Is it actually mapping the contour of the lake bottom?
Yes. Yeah, because of the extraordinary clarity of Lake Tahoe, we're actually looking at using LIDAR in different ways than is common. LIDAR is normally provides best information with respect to land vegetation, but not only can we see the lake bottom, but we can also see differences in shading in terms of what is growing or what is on the lake bottom, and help inform where there might be invasive or native plants. There's also some work underway at UNR to look at using LIDAR to actually just look at clarity and to look at different water quality issues.
Cool.
It's a little trickier because of reflectance and a few other things that come up, but again, the opportunities that we have at Lake Tahoe, just due to the nature of the water, provide some pretty cool opportunities to leverage these technologies in unique ways.
Very impressive. Thank you.
Mr. Jardine.
Just a quick comment. I've seen somewhat familiar with Caltrans and how they've evolved and improved. Just that quick comment.
Yeah, and if I may, Caltrans has been actually a really great partner. They've been, I think as Brendan indicated, there was a lot of resistance, there was a lot of fighting, there was a lot of concern at first, and we all sort of turned the page. And Caltrans was right there, and they turned the page with us, and they just got started as to, like, how do we get it done? And so with respect to Roadram in particular, Caltrans obviously looking at their roads for their credits and their regulatory compliance, they're really leading the way in a lot of these things. So we appreciate Caltrans' efforts.
Mr. Sandell?
I had a couple of questions. Do you anticipate a change to the Tahoe model as a result of the 2017 clarity number? And also, do we have any projection about how soon we'll have some kind of result from the current investigation as to the cause of the change, that drastic change in clarity?
Yes and yes. So when you say Tahoe model, I assume, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you're referring to Lake Tahoe's clarity model that describes Lake Tahoe's clarity. There are a number of models, so I'll assume that.
Well, the one upon which the TMDL was
The clarity model. So the short answer is yeah, I think we will likely be looking at the clarity model as it was originally developed and implemented as a two-dimensional model, essentially up and down. And so there are some other dimensions, obviously, to what's going on. And the biological elements of the model, while there, were pretty simplistic. And so our friends at UC Davis have long asked us if they could have the opportunity and the resources to update that model. And it seems that the tide is probably shifting in their favor in terms of doing some model update. As far as when that's going to take place, the short answer is not immediately. Again, we need to get some resources to come to bear on this. But there are some there are a couple of budget change proposals in process. I know on the Nevada side, particularly, that may bring some resources. We just have to see how those things play out. But if the resources come to bear, that is one of the things that we expect that we will see. So the short answer is, not next year, but I will say within the next 2 to 3 years, I expect that we'll see a project underway. And the result of that, I expect that to have these opportunities to chat with the board and share with you at least what we've learned. Whether those things are definitive at that time, I'll be honest with you. But I think we'll make some progress.
Stay tuned.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Stay tuned. Absolutely. Stay on the board. Don't go anywhere. We're going to keep doing this.
Dr. Horton.
Thank you. I remain a fan of the Lake Tahoe programs in general. Brendan likes to remind me that when we first adopted the municipal permit over 10 years ago, I made some comment about holding hands and jumping into the future together. And the update tonight shows that as we've been walking this path together, we have discovered a new path and new paths that we couldn't see over 10 years ago. And examples of that are improving the road ram process, diving deeper into what's going on the near shore and trying to figure out what's going on there. This is great. This is what I really love about the program is that the board has been very clear about what standards the permittees are to meet, and gives the permittees a lot of freedom to innovate about how to reach those standards. And I think that's a real model for government regulation that we should try to figure out how to replicate in as many different ways as we can. So a year ago, the Water Education Foundation runs tours in various places, and last year I went on the Headwaters tour, which they hadn't run in a long time, and was rather stunned to discover that as we went around the Tahoe Basin, all we did was look at particular projects, and they didn't even get to the municipal permit program and the Lake Clarity program, and this huge effort that we've been undertaking. And so this year when they ran the tour a second time, I twisted their arm into meeting with the environmental incentives to have them explain this overall approach. And the feedback I got was that people on the tour asked so many questions, they way overstayed their time, and they basically had to pull them out with a hook to get them back on the bus to keep going down the road. People who come on that tour are from all over California. A lot of people from Orange County and San Diego and the Bay Area, and so for them, learning about this approach was really eye-opening, and so it's a real model that we can be really proud of. I liked the mention in the report about it may be time to revisit the basic science behind the TMDL and incorporate what we've learned in terms of climate science and all that since we adopted the original TMDL. So I think that that's really good. And while you're at it, it would be great. No, this is something for UC Davis to do.
I was going to say, my spare time.
No. If we could twist their arms to run the model to tell us what percent of the variability in the Lake Clarity that we see in the SECI disk from year to year is due to factors that local agencies have control over, and what percent of the variability is outside of our control, so that when we get numbers like we did in 2017, it's that there's some understanding that it's not just our fault. I mean, it's weather, and things that happen elsewhere and all that. And also, it would be interesting. I don't know if the model is sensitive enough to know, but if that those percentages have been changing over time. Are we getting more control over it or less control over it as time goes on? And then just a thought that there are these two organizations, the Southern California Coast Water Research Project, SCWRP, down by San Diego, and then the we're more familiar with the San Francisco Estuary Institute. But these are organizations that are not academic. They are established to do applied research that is specifically useful to water boards. And we've used work done by SFEI in the past, how to assess wetlands and things like that. But so part of it is they're coming up with technologies, and they're also coming up with approaches that may be helpful in the nearshore program, in addressing the needs of the nearshore program. So I encourage you to reach out to them and to see if they have anything to offer.
Thank you for the comments. A couple things I'd like to respond to. I appreciate the feedback in terms of using Tahoe as a model, and getting back to Mr. Pumphrey's earlier point about how we can learn. Know that the concept of performance-based permitting is something that is it's very hip now. It actually makes a lot of sense. And Tahoe is a great example of how performance-based permitting can work and work well. So I know internally we're having conversations in terms of how we can leverage our experience in Lake Tahoe to apply those lessons learned to individual permits or other general permits that we're writing, to make those permits emulate that same performance-based permitting approach. Again, giving the permittee the flexibility to comply as they see fit, while at the same time setting clear and unambiguous standards about what has to be done in terms of meeting our goals. So know that there is some direct linkages there and some exciting things in terms of moving forward. So you'll probably hear more about that in the coming year on that. Second thing I forgot to mention with respect to the stormwater tools, I mentioned that we made them public. I forgot to mention that those tools are also open source software. Since they are publicly funded, they are open source, and because they are open source, we are finding companies in Southern California are able to use them and build their programs off of them. And so these performance-based approaches, coupled with the tools necessary to implement them, actually provide a really nice package. And so Orange County and San Diego in particular are looking at this, and we've got affinity for San Diego, so we know that San Diego is looking at this and participating on a panel at the upcoming California Stormwater Quality Association conference, essentially sharing that experience in terms of how we're using what we learned in Tahoe to influence stormwater management practices in Southern California.
Very cool.
I would like to compliment you and the other members of the staff in the highest way I possibly could for the incredible work that you've done and shown us in a summary form in your presentation this evening. It is astonishing on so many levels how complex this is, and yet how productive the work has been done, not just by our agency, but by everybody working together has been here. It's been really rewarding. It's an honor to be associated with this project and with the work that's being done. And it's been extremely gratifying to see the change in tone and the change in character of how people deal with each other over the past 10 years. And I agree completely that we talk about what are the models that we can take from Lake Tahoe to other places, and one of the biggest one is, wow, you can really do a lot of stuff if you stop fighting and start trying to figure out how to approach a tangible, positive, measurable result. So you and everyone that has worked with you are really to be commended for what you've done here.
Appreciate it.
And that's my only comment. And I believe that that concludes this evening's portion of our two-day meeting. So we will reassemble here tomorrow morning at 8:30, traffic permitting, and look forward to seeing you then.